on your part.
All right, here we go. Welcome to the On Track and Field podcast. I'm JT Ayers, your host. I've been here for like 108 episodes, and hopefully you've listened to all of them. And if you've not, go back and listen to them. On Track and Field is the one-stop shop you need to go to. Just ontrackandfield.com. How easy is that? They have everything you need for, even if you're just a runner, they have great shoes. I just bought some Topo shoes from them, and my wife did, and she qualified for Boston in the last Long Beach Marathon with these Topo shoes she got from On Track and Field. They're going to have the same stuff for you, but I'm a coach, and you might be a coach, or maybe even an athlete. They have equipment. They have what you need. I just bought this amazing custom-made pole vault landing system for 10 grand less than it is anywhere else. And I got it from them, and they're going to deliver it to me for free. So they do the same for you. Go to ontrackandfield.com. And while you're listening to me talk about all these things, leave us a comment or a nice rating about this podcast. It helps a lot. And our sole purpose is to make sure that track and field community has and gets to listen to some of the greatest people in the sport. And that's actually who I'm going to talk to right now. But go to ontrackandfield.com. Go to the podcast. Like, subscribe, do whatever you need to do, and we'll continue to get you content from the people that you are biggest fans of. With me today is CJ Albertson. I've been watching this guy since he was in high school, and yet he's still getting better, and he's 30 years old. It makes no sense. In 2019, in New York, he ran and set the world record for the indoor marathon. Just think about how many laps that dude had to run. I can't even imagine. 2021, Boston Marathon. This guy broke out and was leading the race for the first 20 miles. Like, he was in it. And then he began to fade back and still got 10th, which is still insane. In 2022, just a few years ago, he broke the world record in the 50K by running 2 hours, 38 minutes and 43 seconds at the Ruth Anderson Memorial Endurance Run in San Francisco. CJ, so good to have you on the podcast.
It's awesome. Thanks for having me on.
So I also forgot to mention that you're also a head coach for a junior college. So let's just start with that. How did you get into that role, and what kind of athlete are you looking for at the JC level? We've never had a JC coach, especially a good JC coach, come onto the podcast. Give us a little like rundown of what our athletes and any athlete listening can kind of hope and expect and even aspire to go to a school like that.
Yeah. I mean, I think, community college, especially in California, is kind of a good, maybe not transitionary place, but just like kind of for athletes that are kind of in between. You know, maybe you don't get those big scholarships to schools you want to go to right out of high school. Maybe you just need a few more years of development. Maybe you're thinking, I'm done with my sport, but then you're like, man, but I really don't want to be done with my sport. And so the great thing about community colleges, we have a variety of levels. So we have athletes that, you know, are pretty good and maybe could compete in the D1 level right now, but maybe just didn't get the opportunity that they necessarily wanted to, or maybe didn't have the grades that they needed. And then we have athletes that have literally never done the sport before, don't even know the difference between track and cross country. And it's like, that's cool. We'll figure it out. You know, just be committed to working hard. You know, and we'll get better together. So it's kind of similar to high school, and you have very differing levels of experience. But then you also have some pretty high level people that are trying to transfer, and it just basically is, there's a spot for everyone kind of at community college. So it's a fun place to be.
Now, do you recruit at the JC level? Do you go look for them? Or do they look for you? Because I want to be honest, JCs around me just seem like a place for kids to go and, you know, their careers to die. They don't get the training like they got in high school. And I'm not saying every D1 program in the United States is really great too, because that's not true either. What separates you from everybody else besides being just, you know, a professional athlete and a very, very good coach?
Kind of both. You know, recruiting, looking for athletes, trying to find the athletes that will, you know, if I know, like, okay, they're going to be getting signed to, like, a D1 school, I'm probably not going to recruit them. I probably know them because they're runners in the area, but mainly looking for those people that I think may not get big money to places. And so I'm trying to tell them, like, you know, there are other opportunities. You know, you don't have to settle for maybe, like, 20% scholarship to some school you really aren't interested in, but it's the only place that's really interested in you. And, you know, and then just for people that maybe want to save money, because community college is free for your first 2 years. So kind of just like educating people on, hey, like there's this community college option. Academically, you know, unless you're in like 20 AP classes, your first 2 years are pretty much the same regardless of a 4 year or community college, but community college is free. You can develop as an athlete. You know, here's what we do. Here's the meets that we go to. And for a lot of like smaller D1 schools or D2 schools, besides their championship meets, we essentially go to a lot of the same meets anyways. So you can still get the experience that you want, but then also be able to compete postseason in a level where you can have some success. Whereas if you went to a D1 school, maybe you're just kind of there. You're not really competing. So it's kind of more education versus recruiting, because there's not like super specific standards. Like, you know, I mean, for the most part, if you want to be on the team, you'll be on the team. I'm not like, I don't, you know, so it's not recruiting and as far as evaluating talent, it's more educating on, hey, here's the opportunities we have. Here's me as a coach. Here's the success our team has had in a short period of time. You know, and also I ran D1, I'm running professionally. Like, I have pretty high aspirations. So you're not just going to come here and suck. You're going to,
right.
I mean, maybe you will, but that's probably going to be on you. But like, I'm going to want to get the best out of you, because I very much dislike losing or being mediocre.
Well, okay, let me ask you a personal question, because I see this all over the place. Why would you stay at JC? Why not go and aspire to be a head coach somewhere else, or a distance coach at some big D1 school or whatever? You know, why do some of these, and they seem to stay, why do junior college coaches stay in that role for so long?
Yeah, I think the best way to answer it, and especially when you're talking to younger people, like, you know, high school seniors and community college people, when you think about when you think about your career, don't necessarily think about what you want to do, but think about what you want your life to look like. Because those are two very different things. Like, when I think about, if I just thought about coaching and what seems cool, it's like, oh yeah, D1 coach sounds, you know, yeah, that sounds awesome. But when I look at what I want my life to look like, community college coaching for me personally just makes so much more sense. Because I want my life to be where I have time for family. I can be home during the weekends. During the summer, I can have freedom. I don't have to be traveling across the country, all through cross country, indoor season, outdoor season, being gone for 3 days at a time, traveling to all these meets across the country. I just stay only in California. Most of our meets are there and back in one day. I get weekends. I don't have to go across the country recruiting. You know, everything's pretty much local in my area. So everything that I want, you know, family time, all that type of stuff, job security, because I'm just finishing up my fourth year. So I'll be tenured as a professor. So, you know, assuming I make it through May, you know, my job is relatively secure, whereas I'm at D1 at any given moment. You
oh,
know,
yeah.
You don't have a job, you don't have retirement, all that. So, yeah. And then the pay is, pretty good. I mean, and if you're a head cross country coach, you know, you're probably not making what I'm making unless you're a, you know, the director of a Power Five track and field program, especially when you max out the salary. Community college plus your stipends is, you know, it's pretty good with the pay level, especially when you're doing something that you enjoy. So yeah, that's why people stay. That's why I'm grateful to have the job that I have, and I don't plan on leaving.
Mm-hmm. Let's talk about Boston. What the heck was that the plan? Like, what, when you got on that line and you were with every single other Olympian and future Olympian and, you know, almost all of Kenya, I mean, what's going through your head? Walk me through that whole experience.
Yeah. I mean, the whole experience was really awesome. That was my first really big marathon race, first Boston, first world marathon major, coming off COVID. So we hadn't had those big races in a while. So I was super excited. And I knew the course started out downhill. So the first mile is about 115 feet of net downhill. The next 4 to 5 miles are a significant amount of downhills too. So I had practiced in long runs going out pretty hard, and running fast on downhill sections, to prepare for that, because sometimes sometimes Boston will go out, you know, under 4:30 for the first mile because it's, you know, downhill and you can run fast. So that's what I was prepared for and trained to do. And so I just went out at a pace that basically I'd practiced at specific for that downhill gradient. And everyone else kind of went out historically slow. So it was a combination of me just kind of running, you know, my own race and everyone else running way slower than you would typically run. To give context, I my first half marathon was 64:20. This past year, 2023 in Boston, my first half marathon was 62:19. And I was with a group of like 15 guys and I got dropped shortly after that. So, you know, 1 year I'm 2 minutes ahead, running 2 minutes slower. And then the next year running, or 2 years later, running 2 minutes faster, there's 15 guys around me and they're, you know, about ready to drop me. So it was just a, you know, combination of a bunch of different things, but overall, super amazing experience, super fun to lead Boston. If you can do it, definitely recommend it.
I remember in high school, you being more of a miler, you know, and I know the 2 mile was really good for you too, but now you're doing marathons and now you're setting world records. Like in 2019, that indoor marathon record was insane. Like that was all over the place. I mean, social media was blowing up about it. And in 2022, going, you know, a 50K and breaking another world record. I mean, are you going out to break world records or is this just like, hey man, I feel good at mile number 24. Might as well just keep going.
Yeah. I mean, I think it's just a matter of like when you see opportunities, you take them. The indoor world record, I wasn't really a professional yet. I just kind of started with marathons and it was a opportunity that I heard about, that was recommended to me by my sister-in-law. And, so I was like, sure, why not? I'll go to New York. And, I was very part-time at the time. And I think our yearly income was like under 30,000. And if I set the record, I could basically earn 7,000. So I was like, man, this is like a quarter of my yearly wages right here. If I set this world record, and I think I can do it. So, it was more just like, you know, I'm taking opportunities. And then same with the 50K, you know, it's like, if you can set a world record, like if you think you're capable of it, why not? And then I had also worked that into my Brooks contract where I can, you know, get bonuses for doing certain things. So, yeah, it's just a matter of taking advantage of the opportunities that are there. And it's pretty fun. So, you know, why not?
That's amazing. Well, okay. I have to ask a question because I don't get this many opportunities to ask someone like you this question. I'm constantly pointing my athletes towards, and my own children towards, individuals that never really stop getting better, be in the NFL, Major League Baseball, running, doesn't really matter. You don't stop getting better. You keep improving. There's like this grit about you where you continue to get better as time goes on. How is that even possible? I mean, aren't we supposed to biologically as a man peak at 22 years old, but yet you're still in getting better? What do you attribute that towards? Like, what is it about you and all these other athletes that are professional that are still improving in the aspect that has to do with sport?
A part of it has to do with the event. I mean, aerobic based events are, you typically, your peak is at a higher age. So, you know, if I was a 50 meter swimmer, then maybe it'd be a little bit different. But yeah, because I'm doing marathons, my, you know, your peak is going to be later. But then within that, I think is, you know, your progression is not always going to be linear. So, you know, coming out of high school, I actually got worse for a few years and it had nothing to do with coaching or anything like that. I had phenomenal coaches and had a great program. I just had some years where I struggled. And then after college, I had a year where I wasn't competing anymore. So I wasn't good enough to go pro, just started normal life. And so for that year, I didn't try to get better. So obviously I didn't get better. And I was just kind of living normal life, running to stay fit before I got into marathons. And then even through marathon training, like I've been getting better overall, but you have periods of times where you don't improve, maybe even get worse. And then eventually you break through. And it's really just kind of, it's maintaining consistency, but also not being too freaked out if you're not consistent. So like, your actions are going to be somewhat consistent for the most part, but like your motivation and energy levels, love for the sport, all of that, you just have to accept that that's going to be fluctuating. So like I'd say, contrary to what people believe, a lot of the best athletes and the ones that are getting better have long careers. Like, they don't just wake up every day and like are just super pumped up to go, like super motivated, like, oh, I love running, I'm psyched for this 14 mile run right now. Like, that doesn't, you know, for the most part, that doesn't happen. And sometimes it's just kind of like, you know, it's just, I don't know, it's not very fun. It's just whatever it is. And when you do have those valleys where you're not really running fast, it's also discouraging and not fun. But you just kind of learn to like not put too much weight into those, and almost, it's not that you don't care about the sport, but you just, you don't have as much emotional investment into the day-to-day, how you're feeling, how you're running, how the races go. I mean, I've got to a point where it's like I would race bad and it was like, it kind of stung, it was frustrating, but I didn't have a whole lot of emotions. Like, I'm still fine as a person. I still have my relationships. I still have all this. So I have a bad race and it's frustrating for like, you know, 30 minutes. Maybe it's a huge race, maybe a couple of days, but then it's like, I got other stuff in life. And so that kind of balance and that like being able to just kind of reset and stay consistent with my emotions. Like, I still train, but I don't rely on like this motivation or this like super pumped up thing, or I don't rely on good results to keep me going. It's like, you just kind of keep doing it. And eventually, you know, you have some good days and you have some just whatever days.
I was going to ask you next, what advice do you have? And I feel like you just answered that. That was great. Okay. Random question. Curveball. What's the longest run you've ever done on a treadmill?
50 miles.
How long did that take? How's that even possible?
I think it was like, I don't know, right around 7 hours. I wasn't training for anything specific. It had no purpose. It was just, I think it was somewhere around like the COVID time. And I just kind of started running, and 7 hours later I stopped.
All right. What? That's insane. That's absolutely insane. All right. So that's, listener, don't do that. You'll die. You will literally die. You're not CJ. That's incredible. So what's next for you? Like, what are you aspiring to? What are you training for? What are you looking forward to? What next world record, Guinness Book world record? What are you doing?
Right now I have the Olympic trials for the marathon coming up. So that's going to be, well, for us talking, next Saturday, but it's February 3rd. So that's in Orlando, Florida. If I'm top three there, I go to the Olympics in Paris. So obviously that's, you know, big thing that I'm shooting for.
Wow, that's early. Why is it so early?
The marathon trials are always pretty early. They're always sometime in, they have to be between January and March, particularly because you take, they want people to have full training blocks for the next, you know, for the Olympics. So like in like, if you're doing anywhere from the 100 to the 10K, it's like your Olympics is in the same training block as your Olympic trials, you know, because they're only a couple weeks apart. But a marathon, you typically have a new training block for every marathon, because it, after you race a marathon, it takes so long to fully recover from it that you typically want to recover and then start a whole new block. So they want to give you at least 4 months in between. But some people like more 5 to 6 months. So that's why it's so long before.
So what do you think? You got it? You got top three?
I think I have a pretty good chance. I mean, there's a lot of, it's a pretty good field. But yeah, I mean, I definitely have like a good shot. Like, I wouldn't say like I'm like favored. So like, I wouldn't have, you know, if you put odds, it wouldn't necessarily be over 50% chance to make it, but I'm like considered one of the people that can make it.
Okay. Wow. That's fantastic, man. Hey, Central Valley, California's very own, man, going to the Olympics. All right. I know it's not happened yet. Where can we go and find results? Are you on social media? How can we know February 3rd if you did this or not?
Well, I believe it should be live on Peacock. So the race is at 10 a.m. Eastern. So, you know, 7 Pacific time here. I'm 90% sure it's on Peacock. Usually NBC Peacock has the broadcast for those. It's like most of the track stuff now. And then I don't know results. I don't actually know, but yeah, then just for social media stuff, like I have Strava or Instagram, and it's just CJ Albertson. It's just my name.
Okay. Well, February 3rd. Mark your calendars, everybody. CJ, we can't wish you more luck. Man, we're so excited for you and what you're doing. You going to Paris and representing the United States, even just going to Orlando and Florida and just representing us. We're proud of you, man. Keep doing what you're doing. And yeah, stick around. You can listen to Steve, who's also a fantastic runner. And I say that in jest because he's not, but he is also a good looking man. He is the CEO of OnTrackAndField.com as well as RelayBatons.com. Both power this podcast, and that's it. There's nobody else. So listen to them. He'll let you know how to get in contact with them on social media. And also be sure to like the podcast, and we'll talk to you soon every Tuesday. CJ, thanks for joining me, man.
All right. Thanks. Have a good one.
Steve, take us away.
Thanks for listening to this week's On Track and Field podcast with guest Coach CJ Albertson. The On Track and Field podcast is powered by RelayBatons.com. Custom engraved meat and competition legal relay batons, water bottles and tumblers. Great for team branding, fundraisers, meat awards and coaches gifts. And by OnTrackAndField.com. Cross country and track's one-stop source for everything you need for a successful season. Competition gear, spikes, training equipment and shoes. OnTrackAndField.com has everything you need, including our new pole vault and high jump landing systems designed by jumpers for jumpers. Check them out online or give us a call for a free quote. And make sure to check out our new website, OnTrackRunning.com, your new source for competition and training shoes featuring Saucony, Brooks, On Running, New Balance, Asics, and Hoka shoes and spikes. OnTrackRunning.com. And make sure to follow us on our socials at OnTrack, the letter N, Field, at OnTrackAndField on Twitter and the gram.